They say, the harder the work, the greater the reward. This is our life's work.
Good morning. It is 9:10, Wednesday, July 10th. This is the TDN Writer's Room, presented by Keeneland. My name is Joe Bianca. I'm the associate editor of the Thoroughbred Daily News. And no John this week, but somehow, like Celine Dion, my heart will go on, Bill.
Yes, good morning. I'm Bill Finley, a correspondent for the Thoroughbred Daily News. And Joe, you forgot to tell our listeners, our viewers, that thanks to a disgruntled viewer, we have a new nickname. The three of us are the three Omigos, not Amigos, Omigos of negativity. That's pretty harsh.
Shout out to Jerry. Love you, buddy. I know you're watching this week. You said you wouldn't, but I know you're there. The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Keeneland. This November, Keeneland is the place to be as the home of the Breeders' Cup World Championships, followed directly by the November breeding stock sale. So it's going to be a real action-packed weekend and week at Keeneland. Entry deadline for Keeneland November is August 1st. You can learn more at november.keeneland.com. So as I mentioned in the open, no John Green this week, but there's a pretty good reason. He was down in Kentucky at the Facick-Tipton July sale and bought the topper yesterday, $600,000 Curlin Colt. I guess he didn't get the memo that it's really hard on us at TDN if you buy the topper right at the end of the sale because you got to rewrite everything. John, could you spend the money earlier next time? But congratulations to John and DJ Stable, and I believe he gave us some footage. He gave Katie some footage down there yesterday to talk about the colt and, of course, us, because we're always on his mind.
No name yet, but I'm glad that I'm able to give you guys some content for the podcast, even though I'm not there this week to be a part of it. But really, you know, we came down here with the idea of trying to get a top colt. And a horse like this just doesn't come around that often. So we're really pleased. You know, when you have a bulletproof pedigree like he's got, you hope that he fulfills his destiny and runs to that ability. And, you know, Mark Cassie, our trainer, is going to do everything possible to have him run in the big races. I literally, you know, in my book, I really literally wrote down, wow, and he's a beast. And I just don't write that down. Maybe occasionally I'll write that down when I see Joe Bianca. But for the most part, when a horse comes out of the barn and you see a really just outstanding colt like that, you know, it gives you the shivers. It gives you, you know, the hairs in the back of your neck stand up. And, you know, thanks to the family for allowing us to do this and for going out on a limb and taking a shot on a horse like this, because it's still a lot of money and it's still a big gamble. But he's the kind of horse that you want to gamble on.
Okay, so we had that Belmont Stars and Stripes Turf Festival on Saturday. It was a really good card, really interesting card. You know, the headline race was the Belmont Derby and Classic Causeway going wire to wire. I thought, honestly, that he was an overlay. That's not me saying that I bet him. That's different from saying that I bet him. I thought he was a little bit of a crazy overlay at 26-1, had turf pedigree. Once Emmanuel scratched, that was a little bit of a controversial scratch. Once he scratched, he was low in speed. Went wire to wire, got an 89 buyer. McCulloch won the Belmont Oaks for, you know, daughter of Frankel, so that was kind of cool. Chad Brown winning with a daughter of Frankel. McCulloch was also the last name of his first employee when he went out on his own as a trainer, so that's an interesting little sentimental story for him. Back to Classic Causeway, I saw Kenny McPeak saying something like, this horse could be a world traveler and go up to 12 furlongs. I don't think Kenny needs to pump the brakes a little bit. I think it was a great spot by him. Bill wrote about in his Week in Review about how Kenny's not afraid to try things. But the horse got an 89 buyer and got the easiest of leads and was getting reeled in at the end. So I don't know how great he can possibly be on turf, but it was nice to see him kind of after he fizzled out on the Derby trail, get his moment in the sun. And obviously he's going to have some more opportunities in great ones on turf. What did you think about the turf races at Belmont, Bill?
Yeah, I totally agree. And, you know, you're right. I mean, Classic Causeway, and Kenny looks to think big, and that's why we love him. You know, but is he going to go and win the Arc de Triomphe? Of course not. He's not nearly good enough. And, you know, had Emmanuel not been scratched in that thing where there's problems with the how Pletcher was informing the vets or whatever about some of the treatments going into it, probably wouldn't have won anyways, because that let him get the lead where he wasn't going to. I don't think he would have gotten the lead, period. But then again, you know, in so many of these Belmont turf races, we expect to see the half going 50, 51, something like that. It's fairly legitimate in 48. So, but again, like just like I wrote, you know, in a game where nobody takes any chances, this is the guy who is the king of taking chances. And, you know, look how it works out for him. This is a $1 million race. Horse is coming back in 2 weeks. He had never run on the turf in his life. I don't think there's too many other trainers in the sport that would have run the horse in this spot. And then in races out of town in Indiana and Indiana Grand or Horseshoe Indiana and Prairie Meadows, he also had a slew of horses, four or five horses that were coming back in 8-9 days. And they all ran great. So it was, you know, a big weekend for him. And it was a big weekend for, you know, just showcasing this is the way I do things. You don't have to give the horse 6 weeks off between every race, which is something, you know, I know I've been talking about ad nauseum. But, you know, that was very good. And, you know, McCulloch got it done for Chad. It's interesting. He's won that race, the Belmont Oaks, six times. Yet he's never won the Belmont Derby, which I just find kind of interesting, and was, you know, one of a number of stars that Chad Brown sent out during a meet where he broke the record for most wins ever. It was just, you know, an absolutely unbelievable. And Joe, maybe I'll get ahead of you a little bit if you want to come back to this. But then the Suburban, and, you know, geez, you know, I hate to keep coming back to the same thing, but is week after week after week, five horses, one trained by Uriah St. Louis, and, you know, again, you know, where does the Suburban fit into the grand scheme of things? And is it, you know, does it make sense to continue to just trot out these five horse fields in these, especially these male dirt races? I don't think it does. I think something needs to be done.
Yeah. And, you know, just going back to Chad Brown for a second, it's always surprising when I see like a grade one turf race that he hasn't won, because I assume he's won all of them by now, you know, if not multiple times. But yeah, that was an incredible stat. He broke the record for wins at the Belmont Spring Summer Meet. He had 48 wins in only 44 days. David Jacobson had the previous record, but that was in a 56-day meet. And this was Chad's seventh consecutive Belmont Spring Summer title. Also, IRAD won the jockey title by one over Dylan Davis. So it's a really big meet for Dylan Davis to even compete with IRAD like that. And we'll see if he can carry that over into the Saratoga meet. But yeah, to your point, Bill, I counted. There were 43 stakes races over the weekend. One horse got a triple digit buyer. One. Mm-hmm. And it was 100. Macron, I think, was the one. He, in the Iowa Sprint, got exactly a 100 buyer. Dynamic One got a 98 in the Suburban. I think he's a nice horse, honestly, and I think First Captain's a nice horse. That was a pretty good battle. But yeah, when you have over 40 stakes races and only one like buyer figure that you can point to as potentially an elite figure, there's just too many stakes races on the weekend, like 43 stakes races across the country. It makes no sense. And like some of these, you know, state bred races that are black type that, you know, probably don't need to be black type. It was just, it was a little, little appetizer for this coming week, because obviously we got Saratoga coming up, but really the only interesting races were at Belmont and the Belmont Turf Festival. So yeah, we don't want to keep beating a dead horse here, but just, too many stakes races. It's just not enough good racing for the amount of black type races we have. But it was good to see those Belmont Turf races as that festival continues to grow. And I'll set everybody up nicely for the Saratoga Derby and the Saratoga Oaks. And of course, we are one day away, just a little over 24 hours as we're recording this from Saratoga. We all obviously cannot wait. 40 days starts tomorrow. The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Keeneland. Graded stakes winning Keeneland September graduates from this past weekend include Grade 2 Suburban winner Dynamic One, who I think is a sneaky player in the handicap division, who was purchased by Rapoli Stables in St. Elias for $725,000. Grade 3 Indiana Oaks winner Interstate Daydream, who's definitely a legitimate contender as well in the three-year-old filly division, a $130,000 Keeneland September grad, and Grade 3 Iowa Oaks victress Butterbean, named after my favorite boxer of all time, who was purchased by Kenny McPeak at the 2020 Keeneland September sale. Yearling sale season is now officially underway, and we're closing in on the 2022 Keeneland September yearling sale, which begins Monday, September 12th. You can learn more about that at september.keeneland.com. Definitely be there. We'll be right back after this message from Keeneland.
When the thoroughbred world descends upon Lexington this November, there is one place you need to be. The place where history comes alive with every championship victory.
He's authentic indeed!
The place where the future is built with the fall of a gavel. The place that exists to be the heart of this industry. The center of it all. Home to the November Breeding Stock Sale and the 2022 Breeders' Cup, Keeneland.
Maximum Security proves he's the real deal with a gate-to-wire win in the Florida Derby.
Champion three-year-old.
Maximum Security has won the TVG.com Haskell Invitational.
11 triple-digit buyers.
Maximum Security, he smoked them in the cigar mile.
Grade 1 winning four-year-old.
Maximum Security takes them all the way in the TVG Pacific Classic.
Secure your mare's future. Maximum Security.
The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Coolmore. On Monday, a son of Uncle Mo topped the Facing Tip in July. Horses of all ages sale when Kuchar, who was a runner-up in the American Derby recently, sold for $500,000 to Steve Young. And then yesterday, at the Facing Tip in July, selected yearling sale, Uncle Mo had a colt out of the stakes-winning mare Super Sex sell for $400,000. He was the third highest-selling colt of the auction. And meanwhile, Classic Empire's daughter, Interstate Daydream, who I just mentioned, won the Indiana Oaks. It was her second straight graded stakes win. Classic Empire now has 6 stakes winners and 10 stakes performers. Definitely one of the sires you should go see at Coolmore, as well as, obviously, Uncle Mo and Cupid. So Bill and I are going to talk a little bit about the Saratoga meet. And just, I don't know, it always feels like this, but I feel like especially this year, it feels like it really snuck up on us. You know, Saratoga came out of nowhere, and there's some new stuff to talk about. We're going to get into the opening weekend races in a second, but there are a couple new things to mention, mainly the Wilson shoot, which is now it's on the Saratoga. I thought it was going to be on the Saratoga backstretch, but it's a 1 mile shoot that starts basically a little bit after, basically like at the clubhouse turn. It's a straight shoot that goes up on the clubhouse turn and then takes a left and goes down the backstretch for 1 mile dirt races. They used to have 1 mile dirt races at Saratoga like in the 80s and 90s, and then they got rid of that with the configuration. And, you know, I think it's a good deal because mile and an eighth at Saratoga is really, really testing. It's a completely different distance than 7 furlongs. At Belmont, 7 furlongs to 1 mile and an eighth, not as big of a difference, I don't think, because it's one turn. At Saratoga, especially with off the turf races, you know, a lot of times there was a lot of in-between horses that didn't even want to be on the dirt in the first place. But you get a race washed off at a mile or a mile and a 16th. You try to get those horses from a mile and a 16th to go a mile and an eighth on a dirt. And when they're not dirt horses to begin with, it's a really tough ask. There are a lot of stagger fests in those races, in those off the turf races, a lot of scratches. I think with a mile, you got a lot of that's within the scope of a lot more horses. And I just think in general, it's also for two-year-olds, you know, when they had a mile and a 16th, two-year-old turf race that would come off the turf, they would bring it all the way back to 7 furlongs. Now you can run those races at a mile. They did a little test of it yesterday, which is really cool. They broke about 6 or 7 horses out of the gate in the Wilson shoot with some of the top jockeys. I don't know if we have the video for that, but so that's exciting. As far as accommodations, there's a newly renovated post bar and a paddock suite at Saratoga, which overlooks the walking path to get from the paddock out to the track. So I think that's going to be really cool. You know, it's always it's a delicate balance at Saratoga because it's so historic and it's so preserved through time that you don't want to upgrade it too much that it becomes just one of these newfangled racetracks or accommodations. But you don't want to, you know, but you also want to update it over time, and you want to have, you know, new stuff for people to check out to get people excited. And I think especially with this, with the view over the track and over the walking path, I think is going to be a hit at Saratoga. As far as this weekend and then the actual races coming up, we got the Schuylerville, which opens the meet tomorrow, the first graded stake on Thursday. John Green and DJ Stable have me and my shadow in that race, so we'll be rooting for them. Mark Cassie has 3 horses. We talked about this. Bill did a great story about Mark Cassie and all his 2-year-olds, so he'll be loaded for bear with the 2-year-olds. We got the Forbidden Apple on Friday, which is a grade 3. And then the big first Saturday of the meet, that's the grade 1 Diana and the grade 3 Sanford Stakes on Saturday. Bill, I know you got a couple of comments on the Diana.
Yeah, well, first of all, I mean, I guess this shouldn't come as a surprise, but you look at it and you have to kind of do a double take. 14 horses nominated for the race, 10 of them trained by Chad Brown, and 8 of those 10 owned by Peter Brandt. So, you know, I don't know how many he's going to run, but it's going to be more than 1 or 2, no doubt about it. And but, you know, among that group, Bleecker Street is the star amongst Chad's stars. She's undefeated 7 for 7, kind of snuck up on people a little bit. I don't think, you know, anybody thought she would develop into a big star, but she won the New York Stakes last time out over Rougier, another horse that's nominated for this race. And, you know, are we going to get to the point someday where there's a 7-horse turf race stakes in Saratoga and every one of them is chained by Chad Brown? I mean, it doesn't seem like we're that far away from that happening. But, you know, Chad Brown coming off the spectacular meet at Belmont would again be the favorite to win the training title at Saratoga. Yeah, the Wilson Chute is, I'm not as high on it as you are, Joe. I just don't really know how necessary it is. And back in 1992, I think, they were running 1-mile dirt races and they were starting on the turn, so it was a little bit different, but it was a disaster. I mean, it got to the point where it was dangerous because the inside horse is running right towards the rail. The outside horses, the jockeys didn't want to get hung 6 wide when they started on a turn. They were sending and everybody was kind of coming at one into the same, trying to get to that same spot. I'm sure this will be a lot better, but it's interesting that the jockeys, as we speak, have still not given Naira approval to run 10 horse fields out of the Wilson Chute. Obviously it's their prerogative and you can't blame them because safety's got to come first. They may tell them that they're only willing to ride in 8-horse fields. So we'll see about that. But Joe, I think this is going to be a spectacular meet. I mean, we always think Saratoga is going to be good, but the Whitney Life is Good versus Olympiad is going to be just a tremendous showdown. And Forewarned will be in there, of course, for Uriah as well. And then Travers, all the big boys except for Jack Christopher look like they're pointing for that. You know, it's too bad that Donegal is out. Otherwise, you would have had probably a race that brought the 3 Triple Crown winners together. And then also from a betting standpoint, they came off another real nice meet at Belmont where Handel was up. And remember last year, they just shattered the record for the most money ever bet at Saratoga with $815 million bet on the meet. With the momentum they have coming off of Belmont, as long as the weather holds up, as long as you don't have a ton of races come off the turf, I think they're going to have another record-breaking meet. It just, the thing about Saratoga is interesting. It never peaks. Just say, okay, it can't get any bigger and better than this. And then the next year, well, wait a minute, they bet $830 million this year. And, because this is what horse players love. They love a great product, historic racetrack, good racing. The field size at Saratoga is not a big issue because there's so many people that want to run there. And, look, you've been handicapping for 2 days, the Thursday card. I don't think you spent 2 days handicapping the opening of the Aqueduct fall meet last year for 2 days. So, thumbs up. I think it's going to be just a great, great meet.
Yeah. And, like you said, everybody wants to run there. So you don't have to worry about short fields. And also you don't have to worry about not seeing top horses because this is where everybody comes out to play. And this is, obviously quality wise, most graded stakes, most stakes races concentrated onto one calendar and one actual full meet. And it's, like I said, this is something that we think about and we complain about throughout the year. Trainers shelving their horses and putting them on the sidelines for no reason. That won't happen at Saratoga. There are so many big engagements for big horses that you're going to get to see everybody. And we talked about this last week about how many special performances and special horses we've seen just in the first half of this year. And I feel like we're going to see, 80, 90% of those horses at Saratoga. So there's going to be something. And that's what's great about Saratoga is every day feels like an event, and every day has a stakes race. There are some kind of semi-sleepy days at Saratoga, maybe like the Sunday after like Travers Day or something. But overall, every day is must-watch, must-see TV. They get 20,000 people through the gates every single day. And if you haven't been to Saratoga, you obviously have to put it on your bucket list. I know I'm not supposed to shout out our competition, but at Thoroughbred Racing Commentary, a guy named Steve Dennis did a really nice story about what makes Saratoga special and really kind of nailed it. And it's a phenomenal place to be in the summer. And it's one of those places that transports you, honestly. Like when you go to Saratoga, you feel like you're on some other planet or some other country. You just forget about everything else in the real world. And you're just there, coexisting with your fellow racing fans and, your fellow party goers. It's really, really special. I tell all my friends about it. I bring my non-racing friends up there and they have a great time. I always tell them, they always like ask to come out to the track with me. And I'm like, as much as I love Belmont or Aqueduct, come up to Saratoga with me. Then you'll get the full, top of the line racing experience. And, everybody at Naira does a great job. It's a ton of work to put on the Saratoga meet, but they just knock it out of the park every single year. Like Bill says, the handle keeps going up and up. And yeah, we can't wait. And Bill makes a good point that, I've been looking at this opening day card since Monday. I do have some strong opinions, either fortunately or unfortunately, for tomorrow. So I'm going to be unloading a bit and just, yeah, we can't wait. I'll be up there in mid-August for a couple of days. I'll give people a shout if they want to come say hello. Best of luck to John Green and DJ Stable. Like I said, they're going to have a bunch of big horses there, and we'll just, let's have safe racing. Let's have a great betting product as much as we possibly can. And we're looking forward to it. We're looking forward to breaking down all the racing every single week. And yeah, we'll talk a little bit about the Chad Brown Invitational next week, Bill, for sure. So best of luck to everybody at Naira and Saratoga. We cannot wait. Starts tomorrow. First post, 10 race card is at 1 o'clock. And we just, the $20,000 claimer now is like the traditional starting point. And then right after that, we got the two-year-olds, we got the babies jumping off early and two stakes races. So it's going to be tremendous. The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by the Pennsylvania Horse Breeders Association. Don't forget, Pennsylvania's Day at the Races is coming up Monday, August 22nd at Parks, with $1 million in purses. Early nominations are now closed, but you can still get in those late noms, which close on August 2nd. Other exciting news out of Pennsylvania, 2021 Pennsylvania Horse of the Year, Chubwagon, who shouted me out on Twitter. It was honestly one of the greatest moments in my Twitter history, is running this Saturday in the Alma North Stakes at Laurel Park. And fellow PA bred Baron, who was trained by Robert Reed, will also represent the PA bred program at Laurel this weekend in the DeFrancis Memorial Dash. I know everybody's going to be watching Saratoga, but I'm going to keep one eye on Chubwagon this Saturday. Just can't help myself. She's that good. We'll be right back after this message from the PHBA.
The PA Horse Breeders Association introduces the Pennsylvania Stallion Series. Four brand new races to be run at Parks for PA-sired, PA-bred two-year-olds. There are two $100,000 contests on August 22nd, PA Day at the Races. September 24th, PA Derby Day, has two more races, each with a $200,000 purse. The PA Stallion Series, yet another reason why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race. For more, please visit PABred.com.
All right, so we had a really cool and interesting interview with Dr. Scott Palmer, who is the equine medical director for the New York State Gaming Commission. And he's spearheading this program called Stride Safe that, you know, figures out the movement of horses down to like the smallest possible denominator, and it finds standard deviation and out of the norm strides. And it's basically just a program to figure out and diagnose potential musculoskeletal injuries early on in the process so that it doesn't become a catastrophic breakdown. It's a really revolutionary program and something that I think can really get us as close to zero as possible in terms of the fatality rate. So we talked to him yesterday. I'm a little damp at the beginning of this interview. This is the last time I try to squeeze in a Peloton before the guest interview. But no, it's really fascinating. Like I said, this is crucial to getting that fatality rate as low as possible. Dr. Palmer and his team doing a real service to the industry and, more importantly, to the horses with their work. So check out our interview with Dr. Scott Palmer. The Green Group Guest of the Week is sponsored by The Green Group, an accounting, tax, consulting, and advisory firm specializing in the thoroughbred industry. With over 500 clients in the horse business, they have proven strategies to save you taxes. Learn more about how they can help you at www.greenco.com. So we're thrilled to bring on this week the Equine Medical Director for the New York State Gaming Commission, Dr. Scott Palmer. Thanks for coming on.
Great to be here. Thank you very much for having me.
Great to have you. And, you know, the thing we most want to talk about is the StrideSafe technology that you and your team are working on and using at the New York Racing Association racetracks. Basically, it's wearable biometric technology, kind of like Fitbit, to track a horse's stride. So for anybody who does not know about it, how does the StrideSafe technology work and what kind of data does it collect?
In 2021, during at the start of the Saratoga meet, I had met with David Lambert, who is the CEO of StrideSafe, and he asked me if I thought it would be possible for us to do a study in Saratoga to see if this technology could be useful to identify horses at risk of injury. And I was excited about that. That's the holy grail for me, is to find out ways to identify horses with minor injuries before they become major injuries. We know from our 20 years or so of research in this area that 85% of the horses that have a breakdown injury have pre-existing musculoskeletal disease or damage. And if we can identify that damage early, we can intervene and take care of that. The horse is fixed. He's not down so much. We don't lose him to the game, and he doesn't get seriously hurt. So this kind of device is the first step where I draw the analogy here, Joe. It's a check engine light in your car. You know, when you're driving down the road, the check engine light comes on. That doesn't mean you have to stop the car immediately, but it means you got to get this thing looked at because something's going on here. It's not good. And if you don't do that, something bad's going to happen. So that's what we got here, is a check engine light. And with that kind of information, that's going to help us to identify these horses at risk of injury, because we can see lameness before a human being can see it or before the jockey can feel it. So these sensors are about the size of a cell phone. And inside that sensor, there's a GPS system, so we can see where the horse is going around the racetrack. It also has three accelerometers. An accelerometer is a device that measures acceleration. That's not velocity. That's not speed, but it's a change in velocity. So we measure acceleration in three dimensions. The first dimension is the front to back. We call that longitudinal. And that means that how fast the horse is accelerating or if he's slowing down during the race. The second vector we're looking at is vertical acceleration. That means how much is he going up and down when he's springing off his hind legs? How high does he go? The third one is medial to lateral. That's side-to-side variation. And that's a really important one for lameness, because if a horse has got some lameness, he's going to shift his weight one side to the other, and we can pick that up. These sensors measure those three vectors in 800 hertz. Now, what that means is 800 times per second, that sensor sends data to a satellite. And since we have three of them, that's 2,400 bytes of information per second we send to a satellite. Then it comes back to a computer, and a computer has an algorithm in it that analyzes that data. We're going to start racing at Saratoga again on Thursday, and we're going to do every horse in every race at Saratoga this year. So it's a really big deal to have that capability. Now, this is a really important slide for your folks to see, if you can get it up there. This is the horse's gallop is a very complex gait. We've all seen horses galloping down the racetrack. It's a beautiful thing, but it's very complicated. When we analyze it with this computer program, this algorithm breaks the stride down into three phases. The first phase is called the hind limb stance phase, and that's when one or both hind limbs are on the ground. And during that phase of time, those gigantic muscles across the back of the horse and in the hips and on down the leg, those gigantic muscles are being loaded like springs. And then that horse springs off, unloads those muscles, and drives forward off those hind legs. And then we have the second phase of gait. And that phase of gait is the forelimb stance phase. During the forelimb stance phase, as illustrated here, you can see the horse is basically catching all that weight and all that energy on those front legs. And that's where all of the concussion occurs. And then the third phase we'll get to in just a second. I just want to point out the squiggly lines on the left are the three vectors that we have, the longitudinal, the vertical, and the side-to-side. So you see those squiggly lines, kind of like an EKG or something like that, that gives you an indication of what's going on. You can see it's very different between the three strides. We get back here to the period of suspension. This is where the horse is floating through the air. And in this period of time, the horse has no feet on the ground. And a couple of important things are happening here. First of all, he's taking a breath. This is the only time in his stride when he can really make a change in how he's going to land the next time his feet hit the ground. So let's just say if you were walking down the street and you've got a pebble in your shoe, you would have a conscious thought, you know, that hurts. When I stepped on my left foot, I felt a pebble. You know, when I put my foot down again, I'm going to land differently. So maybe that won't hurt so much. Well, that's what's happening here. The horse can take his axial skeleton, that's his spinal column and his pelvis, and he can rotate his body in the air and then land a little differently on the next stride. So this is a time in the stride where it's very important that we can pick up things that are impossible to see in any other way. So that's basically what that sensor measures. And then we get this data output. We get total power. How hard is the horse trying during the race? So horse has a default stride when he's galloping, going fast. Not when he's going slow, there's so much noise you can't see it. But when he's going fast, he's not thinking about what he's doing. His subconscious has taken over, and he's got a fingerprint of how he moves. Now, what we did in the beginning, if we don't have any repeated measures on a horse, we don't know what the individual fingerprint is at that point. We look at a group of horses and we develop a population fingerprint over a particular racetrack. So the next slide, the one that says the caution sign, is a slide that shows a graph of flagged races. And on here, you can see a solid blue line. A solid blue line represents the median. That's the average of the total power output during a race. And so the solid blue line is the average. The dotted blue lines are what we call one standard deviation above and below the solid blue line. What that means is science detects variability. No data is perfect. And maybe it's not obvious to the human eye right away, but it's a problem. I want to show you a case study from Saratoga last year that really got my attention. We remember, we only did one race a day, but we just happened to catch this horse and tracing. And you can see here his power and his vibration charts during throughout the race from 0 to 80 seconds. And what you can see here is in the first two charts, the pink line is the horse in question that we did a recording on. The blue solid line, the blue dotted lines, that's the population average. And what you see here, this horse is pretty much right on in terms of power and vibration. Nothing really out of the ordinary. Let's go to the next slide, please. This one has three charts on it. And look at this. Now look at that pink line. And in all of these charts, the pink line is way outside of normal. And you can see in the dorsal ventral chart, that's the one that measures how he's going up and down. Notice that he's really below normal. He's low throughout the race. He's particularly low between 50 and 60 seconds. Those two big peaks down there between 50 and 60 indicate he's not pushing off very well behind. He's really, his vertical acceleration is way down. Now we're going to look at his longitudinal. That's the acceleration, his change in speed during the race. He's going faster and faster and faster and faster until about 55 to 58 seconds in the race. And whoa, big drop off in acceleration. No, it's a big change there. And then when we look at the medial lateral chart, he's been low throughout the race, but there's two significant peaks here. The second peak is between 55 and 60 seconds. That's the big low peak. Something happened there between 55 and 60 seconds into this race. And keep in mind, this was one of the first horses we looked at, the first few races. So I really didn't know what that meant. I mean, I had an idea what it might mean, but I really didn't know for sure. So I called the trainer up and said, you know, I really need to come by and have a peek at this horse. I said, I don't know what happened, but I said, look, this chart, this sensor showed us that something really seriously went off the rails here about 55 seconds into the race. But I did see the horse come off the racetrack and he was fine. And they walked him back to the test barn. He was fine. Quarter of a mile from the unsaddling area to the test barn. Everything looked good. He finished second in the race. Everybody was pretty happy about it. He said, you really don't know what happened, do you? And I said, no, I don't. Well, that horse became lame in the test barn. He was sound walking back there, but he became lame in the test barn. So although something happened in the race, there was no visual sign, no visual clinical sign that he was lame. Until he got back to the test barn, he got lame. He was so lame, we had to put him in an ambulance to get him back to the barn. And then when they got him back there, they x-rayed him. And this is the next slide. He had a fracture of his third carpal bone that he experienced during that race. And I can tell you, I was blown away by that. I couldn't believe that we saw that happen with the sensors, but we just didn't at the time know exactly what it meant. Now we know, you know, if somebody's that far off of normal and we can pinpoint it during a race like that, we know that that horse has got an injury. Now this, thankfully, was not a catastrophic injury. This horse had surgery. He's now back in training. It was a good news story, but it really gave me a wake-up call as to what this sensor could measure and see and how important it was, because we couldn't possibly have seen this any other way. So we had a list of about 131 horses, and we took those horses and followed their careers for 4 months. Now, as you know, a thoroughbred racehorse generally comes back and races somewhere between 30 and 40 days, you know, if everything's okay. But we also know that there are times when horses get sick, or maybe the owner doesn't want to run the horse anymore, or he changes hands or whatever, but the horse might not make it back right on that schedule. But if that horse doesn't come back and train or race for 4 months, there's something wrong with that horse. And it could be sick, but most of those horses, more than 85% of them, are lame. And that means the reason why they're not training and not racing is because they can't. And so we followed these horses for 4 months and looked at each classification, and it was fascinating what we saw. Now,
Dr. Palmer, can I just interrupt for a second? Because I know right now our listeners are all wanting to know the answer to a question. What happens when you get a red flag? Does the horse have to be taken out of training? Does the trainer have to scratch it? Is it up to them? You know, what's kind of like, because that's what I think people, you know, it's great that we get this technology, but what do we do with it?
That's the basis. What I want you to see here, though, is that it's important that if we're going to give people advice about a red flag, it's got to mean something really accurate, right? Now, a red horse is not a scarlet letter for his life, but it means in this race that we measured him, those red horses are different in some way. So in other words, what this means, Bill, is that I can accurately tell a trainer, if you get a red alert, you've got a 40% chance of making it back to race in four months. That's a really bad business model, if nothing else. And it also means that your horse is likely at risk of injury. So now we're getting down to the conclusion here of what do we do with this data. And we're going to do it at Saratoga. Now, so it's a three-step process. You get the flag, you get an examination, then you do imaging, you get a diagnosis, you do the appropriate treatment, and probably the horse isn't going to have to be laid up for a long period of time, and he can stay in the game.
So I have a question. You know, I think you've explained the data and the science of it really well. So I want to know how applicable this is to other racing jurisdictions. You know, at NYRA and at the New York State Gaming Commission, I'm sure you guys have a lot of resources that other smaller states and smaller racing jurisdictions don't have, who might not be as interested in finding out these kind of things. How realistic do you think it is to broaden out this technology to, you know, as many racing jurisdictions as you can find in America?
Well, that's a great question, Joe. Obviously, scalability is part of this. And the other question is affordability, right? So, and logistics too. I mean, not every racetrack has got the personnel. NYRA had to hire a technician to load these sensors into the horses and to unload them and charge the batteries and such. So there's an investment on that part. The Horsemen's Association is involved with this. There's costs involved of the emailing and the communication and such and the training of people. There also is a need to have a good collaborative understanding with your veterinarians, you know, so that everybody can work together here. And that's a really important piece I want to talk to you about just in a second. But getting back to your specific question, right now, we still don't know how expensive this is going to be for a racetrack to do this. I'm sure you're well aware that HISA is now requiring things of racetracks that were not required before, which cost money. And so in my own mind, and I don't know, honestly, Joe, but in my mind, this is probably not the time where HISA is going to start requiring this kind of technology, because the baseline is still very low and the bar that has to be raised is very low. So we need to work up to stuff like this.
Yeah. Dr. Paul, I just wonder, though, is this perhaps opening up a Pandora's box? Because suppose a horse is red flagged, and from what you told us, that doesn't mean the trainer has to scratch the horse. The trainer comes back and runs a horse in 3 weeks and it breaks down. You know, boy, wouldn't PETA love to be all over that? Wouldn't horse racing's enemies like to be all over that? I just wonder, I mean, I love everything you do. I think it's great. But I wonder if, you know, that's kind of an avenue or an area where there might be some, unforeseen problems.
I think you're right, Bill. I think there's a potential for that. I think the way I would address that is we have to manage expectations. We have to manage expectations. This is not a magic wand. This is not a scarlet letter. Like I said, the thing that we're doing over time, Bill, is in fact that the single event is not as important as if we have maybe we have three recordings on a horse. Maybe he's raced three times. Maybe he was green, then turned yellow, then turned red. Now that's a trend in the wrong direction, right? And so that is important information. We could have a green go to a red and back to a green again, and everything's fine. But what if we had three red races in a row? Okay, the first time we examined the horse, didn't find anything. So, okay, if you do a thorough veterinary examination, you don't find anything. You know, I think really you have to say, well, okay, we got to really watch this horse. But a bad thing could still happen. We can't prevent everything from happening. But the point is that we should be able to do a better job.
Last question for me. You know, I can't have an equine medical director on the show without asking about HISA and the upcoming, you know, medication control program that supposedly is going to be in place by January 1st, 2023. I think there's a little bit of an issue in racing where some of the smaller, you know, less effective drugs trainers get popped for, and those get highly publicized. Like the Bob Baffert stuff, I don't think in itself, you know, betamethasone was that big of a deal. Whereas there are some of the stronger drugs that people don't really talk about, like I think of clenbuterol. And that really wasn't a big discussion point, at least amongst the layman in racing, until Mark Cashy brought it up in the TDN. And now clenbuterol is pretty much banned everywhere you go. So what are some of the specific drugs, or maybe not specific drugs, but points of emphasis that you want to see in terms of cracking down on the stuff that actually does make a difference in terms of making races unsafer, in terms of, you know, edge and performance? What's some of the stuff that you want to see emphasized when that medication control program comes into being next year?
Okay, it's a little bit of a long story. Let me start out by saying I'm all over the clenbuterol thing. that you may remember when those indictments came out back in 2019, and they had a laundry list of drugs that were given to these horses. I went to my executive director and I said, I don't think most of this stuff makes a bit of difference. I think the clenbuterol is what's going on here. And I said, they didn't even mention clenbuterol in the indictments. But I said, it's in my book, it's all about clenbuterol. Now, are there going to be bumps in the road, difficulties getting every racetrack to do all the things they need to do? Absolutely. So there's an implementation phase here that's going to be a little rough. But in the long run, I think it's a really great thing for horse racing. And remember, back in 85, the Jockey Club hired the McKinsey Group to do interviews with folks, both racetrack insiders and the general public, and said, you know, what is it about horse racing that you don't like? Or why don't you want to be involved with it? Is there a stigma about horse racing? And you remember what they said. They said two things, dead horses and drugs. It was that simple. Okay. So I can assure you that most of my work is centered on reducing the amount of medication and keeping horses alive. I mean, it's that simple. That's what I do. And so I think that when we get down to the drug thing, it's really important, along the lines of what you were talking about, to educate people to understand there's a difference between a performance-enhancing drug and a controlled therapeutic drug. No athlete in the world can compete in a professional sport without some kind of therapeutic medication somewhere along the line. Okay, so we have to be patient and give HISAS some slack in getting this going. And really, everybody's got to pull together. I mean, it's a federal law, Joe. It is what it is. We're not going to change it. We, you know, my job right now is just to ensure that we have complete continuity of all the programming and all the protective measures in place until such time as HISA can get up and running. And, you know, then we go from there. In areas where HISA doesn't speak, the state gaming commissions are still going to work. So I'm you know, two thumbs up for HISA. I think, though, we have to be patient, have to keep ourselves open to this, but I can assure you that the current medication program is all over the deal between the difference of blood doping and other performance-enhancing drugs and the basic stuff that a horse needs to get along with.
Well, that's great to hear. And Dr. Palmer, as long as we have people like you in charge and in positions of influence where you're looking out for the horses first and foremost and also looking out for the future of the sport, I think we'll be in good shape. Thanks so much for the time and the expertise, Dr. Palmer.
You're welcome,
Bill. Thank you, Dr. Palmer.
Good welcome, to Bill. To nice to visit with you both.
Absolutely.
Go Red Sox.
How many games back are you now, Bill? 14?
Well, behind the greatest team in the history of baseball, what do you want?
The Green Group Guest of the Week is sponsored by The Green Group, an accounting, tax, consulting, and advisory firm specializing in the thoroughbred industry. As this week's Green Group Guest of the Week, Dr. Scott Palmer will receive a free one-hour tax consultation. Learn more at greenco.com. We'll be right back after this message from The Green Group.
Why do the most successful owners, breeders, and horsemen select the Green Group as their tax advisor? We simply save them money and know how to make them more successful. Over the past 40 years, founder Leonard Green has owned and bred some of the best racehorses in the history of the sport. His in-depth, hands-on industry knowledge, combined with cutting-edge tax-saving strategies, has produced positive results for his clientele and has made the Green Group the top-rated accounting and tax firm in the business. For a confidential and complimentary consultation, contact us at 732-634-5100 or visit our website at www.greenco.com. The Green Group, proven strategies to save you taxes.
The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by XBTV. This week's XBTV Workout of the Week, of course, takes place at the Spa. Saratoga opens tomorrow. It's Jackie's Warrior going 4 furlongs and 49.70. Steve Asmussen, trainee, owned by friend of the show, Kirk Robinson and Judy Robinson, is undefeated this year, and his first three starts is pointing towards the Grade 1 Alfred G. Vanderbilt Handicap on July 30th. We can't wait to see him. He's one of those horses, Bill, that did stick around and does race, a horse that easily could have retired after his three-year-old season, but they brought him back, and he's a joy to watch every time he runs. Can't wait to see him up at Saratoga. And, of course, XBTV is the home for all of your Saratoga workouts, all the Oklahoma track stuff, all of the main track stuff. I was handicapping tomorrow's card, and I was watching some of the two-year-old breezes. The two-year-olds get started early tomorrow, the second race on the card. I was watching some of those breezes at the Oklahoma and on the main track. It really is invaluable to your handicapping. The clocker reports are great, but with XBTV, a lot of times you don't even need the clocker report. You can watch the work yourself and make your own judgment. So definitely a valuable resource for this coming Saratoga meet. And of course, Del Mar and all the other major tracks as well. So shout out to XBTB, definitely doing a service to horse players there. Cannot wait for Saratoga and all those accompanying works. Okay, so we're going to try to get this all into one segment this week. All of the guys that really sleazy guys in racing who are finally getting their comeuppance. We have two in particular this week to report on. The first is trainer Juan Vasquez, who basically is a guy who's been, you know, kicked out of several different tracks. He has finally been suspended for a meaningful amount of time. The Pennsylvania Board of Stewards, I'm quoting from Bill Finley's story here, the Pennsylvania Board of Stewards has suspended controversial trainer Juan Vasquez through January 26th, 2025, alleging that Vasquez shipped a horse from Belmont Park to Parks Racing in January that was in such poor condition that it had to be euthanized shortly after its arrival. In their ruling, the stewards pulled no punches, calling Vasquez's actions grossly negligent, cruel, and abusive. I think that's an understatement, if anything. And this is the kind of thing that's happened with him before. Just a guy who's a proven cheater, who's broken the rules over and over and over again, and is finally seeing some significant punishment. And in Bill's story, he noted that January 26, 2025 is when his license is supposed to expire. And then so he'll have to reapply for a new license. And supposedly it'll be easier to deny him a new license than to revoke his current license. Obviously, this is a guy that does not need to be around horses at all, much less in horse racing, being one of our, you know, our main trainers at even a B-level track. It's just it looks terrible. And it's just unfortunate that every horse that went through his care had to put up with him all this time. And hopefully he'll never, ever be on the racetrack again. Bill, what do you have to say?
Yeah, he also had another horse a while back that shipped to Belmont, that when the horse arrived, it was dead. All right, so a couple different takes on this. First of all, I mean, good for the Pennsylvania Racing Commission. And, you know, they've had it with this, clear that they've had it with this guy. And there's going to be no more 30-day suspensions, 60-day suspensions, whatnot. You know, they put the hammer down on him. And, you know, I guess in horse racing, anything is possible. And, you know, Marcus Vitale found a way back because the Arizona Racing Commission, of all things, gave him a license. But I got to think maybe this is finally the end of Juan Vasquez. This is going to be hard to come back from this. But here's my other take, Joe. On opening day at Saratoga, Juan Vasquez has two horses in on the card. And what's going on here? Okay, so first of all, the Pennsylvania Racing Commission didn't start the suspension until the 18th of July. I'm not quite sure why. I'm sure they had a reason to do that. And then it's not Naira's fault because this, back to the Baffert thing, this judge said they can't kick anybody out without giving them a hearing and everything. But let's look at the situation overall and the state of horse racing and as the game as a whole. How is that possible that a guy can get a 2.5-year suspension called grossly negligent, cruel, and abusive? And, oh, hey, welcome to Grand Saratoga. It's opening day. Isn't this great? And who's going to win the Schuylerville today? And, yeah, Juan Vasquez has two horses on the card. Now, everybody loves to hate PETA, and for good reason. But what if PETA came out and said, wait a minute, you called this guy grossly negligent, cruel, and abusive, yet he's running horses? Would they necessarily be wrong about that? I don't think so. Now, you know, I don't know if PETA's paying any attention to this. I guess I hope they're not. But, you know, there's something very wrong here. And racing needs to fix this. You know, it's good that Juan Vasquez is probably out of the game for good now. But shouldn't this have happened 10 years ago to this guy, where just the industry as a whole said, enough, goodbye, spend the rest of your life working at Target, pal?
Yeah, and he's, like I said, he's a guy who's a proven cheater in multiple jurisdictions. It's not just like this is the one incident that got him to be suspended for a meaningful amount of time. And we talked about him last year. You know, we mentioned, unfortunately, that Joe Applebaum from NYTHA had horses with him. I don't think that's the case anymore. But when we were talking about that, you know, we talked about the horses, the miracle turnarounds that he's had with these horses, like the Critical Way, who was, you know, 10 years old and finding his best form last year as a turf sprinter. He had Hollywood Talent, who won the Parks Dash at 108-1 and then shockingly tested positive for a banned substance in that performance. And it's just one of those things where you should only get so many chances. And that's where the lack of coordination comes in, where you could say, well, he failed these tests at this track or in this jurisdiction, but he hasn't done that here. And I assume that's why, you know, Marcus Vitale, you know, found a 50th chance somewhere in racing, but it's where the lack of coordination really hurts where, you know, obviously once the suspension comes in, you get reciprocity. But before that, it's all just kind of, you know, pissing in the wind, because, you know, there's always going to be a time or a place where these guys are going to find a way to race a horse. But yeah, he's, you know, he's the kind of guy who, again, should just be toxic, everywhere he goes in America. And it's not, you know, it's not as if we don't have, you know, a great amount of trainers who would take his place and do things the right way. You know, there are so many trainers who are getting pushed out of the game who are doing things the right way, and they just can't compete with the juicers of today. And, you know, there's no reason that a guy like him, there's no reason that he should be more valuable to a track or a racing jurisdiction than a guy who's trying to do things the right way and trying to play by the rules. And, you know, if it takes it, if it has to be one by one, and he's, you know, we have to be patient, and these guys, as long as they're gone from the game eventually, then I think that's the only thing that matters. He's gone. I don't want to name any names, but there's some other guys who are kind of, you know, bending the rules a little bit in the past couple of years who I think should be gone. But he was the extreme case, because not even just the drug violations, the stuff that we're talking about in this story, just horrible, cruel, abusive thing where he's just not taking care of the horses at all. And I obviously wonder how people like that sleep at night. And it just, it's one of those things that's like, you can't believe you share a country, let alone a species, with people like this who would do this to horses. So I would just want to transition from that. You know, there's another guy who got his just desserts this week. It's Seth Fishman, who was the distributor for guys like Jorge Navarro and allegedly Jason Service. He got 11 years in prison this week, which, geez, that's a serious sentence. And I'm honestly, I don't know how you feel, Bill, but I'm like kind of pleasantly surprised with how much time these guys are getting. Like Jorge Navarro pled guilty, still got 5 years. Seth Fishman took it to trial, got 11 years, and doesn't sound like he's, you know, with federal time, he doesn't sound like he's going to get out early. His sentence also includes a $250,000 fine. He must forfeit $13.5 million, which I doubt he has, but that's the thing where they said that that's what his drugs supposedly earned Jorge Navarro in illicit purse earnings. The judge, I got to say, the judge in this case really knows what she's talking about. I think when these cases first started, we were a little bit worried about who the judge was going to be, whether or not they were going to have an intimate knowledge of racing. Mary Kay Viscoso, it seems like, knows this stuff inside and out, and she's done a very good job. Next, I think, is Jason Service. And also, what happened to Nick Surik? Wasn't he one of those defendants and one of those guys who was allegedly abusing and killing horses in harness racing? I know I'm throwing a lot of stuff at you, Bill, but go ahead.
Yeah, okay, so Nick Surik first. In a superseding indictment that came out at some point in time, his name was taken off of it, which leads you to believe, oh, it's not. It's obvious that he's cooperating. And he was closely linked to Navarro. So I'm wondering if he cooperated behind the scenes or was ready to testify against Navarro. Is he completely off the hook? I don't think so. I don't really know. That whole thing has been a little bit confusing to me. But yeah, he's of the real bad guys and the real, real bad guys. He's one of the real, real bad guys. Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised as well that this guy got hammered. And boy, did he get hammered. 11 years in jail. And, you know, there's a couple of things going on right now. I mean, he was doing terrible things, supplying people with drugs, with, you know, couldn't care less about what it would mean to the horses, whether or not it would mean in some cases, you know, horses were dying with some of these trainers. And Joe, you nailed it. This judge, I've been in a couple of these courtroom cases. She absolutely gets it. She absolutely gets how serious this is. And I also suspect that she has a real affinity for the animal. Just some of the things she said, which is great. You should have an affinity for the animal. That's what was missing from all these people. And also, you know, you got to give kudos to the government and the Department of Justice, too. They have created airtight cases. I mean, they have that's why, you know, you wonder if Fishman and Service going to trial, what were they thinking? There was zero chance this guy was going to win at a trial. He gets 11 years. You can't tell me that if he didn't plead earlier, it might have gotten 5 or 6. That's how the system works. And, you know, he got what he deserved. Good riddance. And and Jason, you're next, pal. I think Jason Service will sentence will eclipse Fishman. I think he's going to wind up being the guy that gets the longest sentence whatsoever. And he's the last guy standing. And as everybody says, in cases like this, you don't, that's the last thing you want to be. It's the last guy standing. Everybody else, cops, please, rats everybody else out. No, no, Jason taking this all the way to you know, to the end. He's taking it to the finish line. And the finish line is going to lead to San Quentin.
And we talked about it before, but I just don't understand what he's thinking, honestly. Like, is it just hubris? Is it just, I don't know. I can't understand why you would want to take it to court with the feds, especially after you're watching what's happening with all the other people, with Navarro and now Fishman. Like, I would be shitting bricks if I saw him get 11 years and I'm the last guy standing when the music stops. Like, I just don't get it. But yeah, that trial starts next year, early next year in 2023. And, you know, there's going to be fireworks. And, you know, there's no, honestly, for these guys, there's no amount of time really that would be satisfying completely. But 11 years is pretty damn good. So it was a good week, I think. You know, we haven't had many weeks like this. We talk about it on the show. We usually just complain about how trainers are getting away with stuff and not getting punished. This was a good week for getting the bad guys out of here. In terms of Juan Vasquez never being around a racehorse again or a horse, period. And Seth Fishman, a guy who was, you know, the facilitator and the enabler for so much of the scummy juicing that we saw all these years, gets 11 years in jail. And I, you know, someone said this in the comments, and I wonder about this too. I don't think it couldn't have just been like Jorge Navarro that he was giving drugs to. It's got to be other trainers and other clients that he had. And I would love to see that client list and the owner's list. And, you know, I wonder who else is out there that had been using Seth Fishman's services that is still training racehorses, because I imagine there are some. TDN Writers Room is brought to you by West Point Thoroughbreds. Joining a West Point Thoroughbreds partnership can vault you into the world of instant camaraderie among people surrounding high-class horses and stakes action for a fraction of the cost of trying to do it on your own. You can learn more at westpointtb.com. West Point superstar Flightline put in his first work since the Met Mile at Santa Anita on Saturday. Went 4 furlongs in 47 flat, best of 54. Can't wait to see him in action at Del Mar later this summer. And if you're lucky enough to be at Saratoga this summer, be sure to stop by the Racing Partnership and Syndicate Night at the National Museum of Racing and Hall of Fame on Tuesday, July 19th. So that's next Tuesday. From 5:30 to 7:30, West Point and several other partnerships will be there. You can learn more about getting involved in thoroughbred ownership. I can't think of a partnership that's better to get involved in than West Point, but there are plenty of partnerships out there that are welcoming new people into the game, and it's a great, great thing, and West Point is at the top of that game. And obviously, with horses like Flightline, it's natural that you want to be involved with West Point and Thoroughbred Syndicate. So we'll be right back after this message from West Point Thoroughbreds.
All the thrills, fraction of the bills, experience the power of the partnership, change your life, make new friends, and compete at the highest level of thoroughbred racing. West Point Thoroughbreds, the gold standard in racing partnerships. Visit westpointtb.com.
Being a small family business, I guess we're part of a dying breed. We're really grateful for the people that entrust us. We know it's a huge responsibility.
We're always with your horse, every step of the way. When it comes to being at the sales ground, showing your horses, we are with your horse.
Just driving up down the road every day, there's not a time that I don't look out and feel a responsibility to the sport, the animal, the people that come to invest in the game. I want to see as many people enjoy this sport as they possibly can, because we do have the most beautiful sport in the world.
The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Legacy Bloodstock. If you think that 50 years combined experience in the horse business could benefit your program, give Tommy or Wendy a call. They personally advise on each horse as if they were their own. Yearling sale season is here, so make plans to stop by Tommy and Wendy's consignment at the Keeneland September sale. Nominations deadline for the Keeneland November sale, where they'll have horses as well, is August 1st, so give them a shout. Yeah, it's great. It's great that yearling sale season is back around, because I know that they do a ton of work, a ton of prep work. So we got the Facing Saratoga sale coming up in the summer, and then obviously Keeneland September and a couple other smaller sales that I think they're going to be at as well. So shout out to Tommy and Wendy and everybody at Legacy. Give them a call. This week's Remy cartoon, we have a certain fan of the show and friend of the show, Bobby Flay, making an appearance. And going against a horse, I guess, makes sense. And as we get towards Saratoga, And the horse's signature dish, he says, is oats. Of course, what else would it be? And, you know, on the backside is maybe one of the only places that Bobby Flay would not win one of those cooking competitions. So shout out to Bobby. And you know, I'm sure we'll see him a bunch on the Saratoga backstretch. And of course, shout out to Remy. You can't wait to see all of his cartoons this summer as the Saratoga Racing Meet unfolds. Wanted to mention this real quick before we get out of here. This was a major story, and we had the representative who was spearheading this on last year about bringing penny breakage to Kentucky racing. Now, if you're unfamiliar with breakage is basically money being stolen from horse players. You know, if your bet is supposed to pay $2.36, they'll round it down to $2.20 or sometimes $2.30, and that, you know, that money adds up over time in terms of, you know, churn. Horses, you know, horse players can't have that money in their account and rebet it. And it doesn't seem like a lot, but it is a lot if you add up like all of your winning wagers over the year and all of the pennies and the nickels that you did not get. So this coming Friday, this is from the Thoroughbred Idea Foundation, and shout out to Pat Cummings from TIF, who was a big proponent of this, and I think really helped get this ball moving. This Friday at Ellis, starting at Ellis Park, the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission confirmed that the shift will take effect this week to penny breakage, 3 months after the legislation enabling the change was passed by the Kentucky General Assembly and signed into law. So now, until now, if the unbroken return on a show bet was $1.48.5, the return for every $1 unit was rounded down to $1.40. The $2 bet returned $2.80. Beginning Friday, in the above example, a winning bettor would receive the full $1.48 for every dollar. The $2 bet, in this example, would return $2.96. You know, that's a significant, that's almost 10%. That's like a little less than 10% of what you should normally be getting that you haven't been getting. I know Bill, always a champion of the horse player, has some feelings on this.
Yeah, it's terrific. And again, Joe, like you said, it doesn't seem like a lot, but this thing adds up over time. You know, you bet the horse and it goes off at 3-1 and it comes back and pays $8.20 when it should have paid $8.37 or something like that. Doesn't seem like a lot, but it really is. So, you know, again, shout out to the people, Adam Koenig, the representative that pushed this through. Pat Cummings was behind it as well. Now, and you're right. I mean, this was highway robbery. This money belongs to the horse players, but they had this excuse going back to the 1960s where they didn't want the clerks paying off the winning bets to have to worry about pennies and that sort of thing. Well, you know, now that 90%, 92-93% of the betting is done online or away from the track, that doesn't make any difference whatsoever. My one hope would be that this, it doesn't stop at Kentucky. This should happen, you know, at every single racetrack and every single jurisdiction in the country. But, you know, this money is going into the pockets of someone other than the horse player. So there's people out there or organizations or whatever, they're going to fight this. But yeah, you know, congratulations to Kentucky. And, you know, we moan and groan all the time about, you know, people don't look out for the horse player. Well, damn, these guys really did. And, you know, again, I can't say enough good things about it.
No, they sure did. And your point is well taken, that there's no reason that this shouldn't be adapted and adopted everywhere across the country. This should be at every track, especially the major tracks. It just made no sense. And again, it's one of those things that it just looks so old. It looks so old and out of touch compared to sports betting now that we're competing with sports betting. Because this would never happen in sports betting. They're always going to pay you down to the penny. Otherwise, they know that people would leave and they would think they're getting screwed. This is something that horse players, I think, have just become inured to over time because they're used to it. And now that it's actually changing, I think people are going to feel the difference. And again, hat tip to Thoroughbred Idea Foundation and the Kentucky House of Representatives for getting this done. Now let's get it done in New York and California and go all down the line. Give horse players their rightful money down to the penny. All right, so Saratoga starts tomorrow. I said earlier that 1 o'clock is the first post. It's actually 1:05. Cannot wait for that. 40 days starts tomorrow. We'll be glued to our TV. So that's going to do it for this week's edition of the TDN Writers Room, presented by Keeneland. This November, Keeneland is the place to be, as the home of the Breeders' Cup World Championships, which will be followed directly by the November Breeding Stock Sale. Entry deadline for November is August 1st. So get those entries in. You can learn more at november.keeneland.com. I want to thank Bill Finley, our Green Group Guest of the Week, Dr. Scott Palmer, our producer, Patty Wolf, our guest director today, Sue Finley, our associate producer, Katie Petruniak, and our editors, Anthony LaRocca, Aaliyah LaRocca, and Nathan Wilkinson. Thank you so much for watching. Have fun this weekend at Saratoga. We'll see you next week.